Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, today is Thursday, August the 8th, 2024. Do you realize, or let me ask you, do you have any idea what very important event happened a half a century ago on this date, 50 years ago?
I don't know what happened 50 Tom, or 100 years ago, but I know what happened 20 years ago.
What was that?
My grandson Lance was born.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, here's the answer. Richard Nixon resigned on this date 50 years ago and bringing to a close the Watergate saga.
And a saga it was.
There you go. We're beginning our 15th year in January with our radio program coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our radio station is 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We've got five radio stations under the Bustos Media banner right here. Five stations under one roof, and the latest acquisition, 101.7 The Drive, which is celebrating their fifth anniversary this week, I believe. BuckmasterShow.com, the place for all of our podcasts, and the place to listen to the show live. And when we do our telephone interviews, we'll do a couple of those, actually one of those, with our Travel Talk segment at 12:30. The Live Lines presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Always a good time to bring in Dr. Zach Guido, of course, during the summer rainy season, a.k.a. monsoon. Zach is our contributor on climate. He is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as the acronym is AIR. Appropriately enough, AIR coordinates the interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water, resources, and beyond. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Bill.
So we were talking before we went on, and I think we're both in agreement. The signature in each monsoon season, monsoon year, of course, is different just by the very nature of how unusual this monsoon, which translates in an Arabic word, which means wind. But the signature so far would be an early onset mid-June.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like this is what's fantastic about the monsoon. It's like there is no two monsoons that are alike. In some way, they're different. You know, sometimes it's, you know, go back to, you know, 2020, and it was like historically dry, right?
What, we get one and a half inches officially?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. Yeah. It was bad. Yeah. But then the next year, right, like the July it was the wettest July on record.
Yeah, it was like
regardless of the monsoon.
10 inches or something.
Like 8 inches at the airport. Okay. Yeah, and it was, and so, yeah, every year there's a lot of variability within the season. And there's a lot of variability if you look at it sort of across the Southwest. You know, we've talked about this a lot, but, you know, the monsoon here in the Southwest, you know, is really on the northern fringes of the monsoon phenomenon. It's really like the core of it is in Sonora, Mexico. And so as you move sort of away from the core, the variability in time and in space, you know, increases. And so we get, you know, expressions of the monsoon that are very different. And as you mentioned, I think, you know, so far we're, you know, about halfway through it.
The official start is June 15th and the official close is the end of September. So by my reckoning, we're about midway through.
Right. And that, and then if you also look at like just the historical average amount of moisture in the atmosphere, mm-hmm. during that period, we're sort of right now at the peak. Mm-hmm. So we'll start descending as we go further along. But the defining feature so far was that early onset. And it was, you know, we at my house, mm-hmm. you know, we got close to 3 inches of rain in June.
Yeah.
And we had, I believe if you were to look at like traditional, let's say less, more objective, atmospherically defined definitions, the onset of the monsoon would have been around the 22nd or so of June. And that is, you know, about 10 days mm-hmm. earlier than on average. And yeah. So you get an extra 10-day slice in the monsoon period couple extra days of rain, and you just set yourself up for sort of a more likely above average monsoon season. But yeah, that June was pretty pretty special.
Yeah, we started the season up at the Buckmaster Bungalow with a 3-inch rainfall in 90 minutes. That's kind of how things kicked off. But we're about at 5 to 6 inches now in the lower foothills, Swan and River, Swan and Sunrise area. All right, I posted on my Facebook page last weekend, and here's what I wrote, Zach. It seems each monsoon, summer becomes more violent and destructive. I'm looking back, by the way, over my 36 years here in town, and then reflecting also when I was at the University of Arizona in the mid-60s. Back in the day, and that would be that period from the mid-60s to when I was at the U of A, we'd have an afternoon thunderstorm that you could set your watch by, 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And a lot of response from so-called old timers was they remember those days. Where do we go with what I posted a week or so ago?
Well, it's a good question. I think the question is like, has the character of the monsoon storms changed over time?
Yes.
So intensity is one thing, sort of timing is another, spatial, you know, extent is another. And I'm maybe going to give like a fairly unsatisfying answer.
Okay.
And that is, to the extent that we can interrogate that question with actual data and answer it, like there does not seem to be in rainfall a lot of trends, systematic changes over time. Now, there's a whole bunch of caveats to that. The first thing is, in the intensity, right? You mentioned before that within 90 minutes, you received
3 inches.
3 inches.
Yes.
In order to understand that question, we would need to have hourly data, right? And we would have to have it, given the variability in space, we would have to have it fairly high spatially. There would have to be a high number of stations to do that. We simply don't have that level of data coverage, so it's really difficult to sort of interrogate that with actual data. I think then you look at the question in terms of like, well, what are the driving patterns that would influence rainfall, timing, extent, and intensity? And you sort of like can look at radars. You can look at there's a whole bunch of different ways to sort of cobble together data that can assess those kinds of questions. And again, here it's like there's such high variability in the patterns that it becomes really difficult to pull out a trend, because statistically, the signal of the trend has to be big relative to the year-to-year or season-to-season variability. And when you have high variability of a phenomenon, you need longer records or more records. And then that couples with the fact that, you know, it's so frustrating. We just don't have enough data to answer that question. And so my answer would be, I don't think the drivers of the monsoon, like the position of the high pressure ridge, right? Like the amount of easterly waves that are coming through, temperatures at, you know, upper levels and so on and so forth. I don't think those have changed systematically to where we would say definitively that you know, it's getting more violent, for example, to use your example.
And a listener just weighed in. Yes, these storms are more violent now. Go ahead.
Well,
so just had a vote for me there.
There's another part to that, which is our memories are not the greatest recorders.
Of course.
Right? So we tend to have recency bias,
yeah,
right? So, but it's a good question. And it's one that the community itself needs to think about having novel ways of like sort of parsing this out. But I can tell you, like, every year, you know, with my colleagues, like, we're always bemoaning the fact that, like, we just don't have enough spatial coverage to really, like, get at the sort of details of these kinds of questions.
But it seems like every, when you see the forecasts, these, they say almost every, when you look at the discussion from the National Weather Service, they say these storms are capable of violent, well, they don't know if they say violent, maybe they do say violent, but they're capable of 50 plus mile an hour winds and destructive this or that. I mean, I don't know if this is something
that's
new.
Not new.
Okay.
So the term microburst is used. Some of your listeners might be familiar with
yes.
that. But think about like a monsoon convective cloud. You can look in the distance and you can see these rain showers.
Oh yeah.
Right. Well, that is a bunch of mass falling to the ground. Right. Mm-hmm. Rain mass mm-hmm. falling to the ground. That is pushing the atmosphere down. That when that mass strikes the earth, mm-hmm. it has to go somewhere mm-hmm. and it goes outward, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what generates really strong rain. Now, if you have a lot of moisture in the atmosphere and you have a sudden burst, mm-hmm. and I can talk about what mm-hmm. might cause that, you're gonna have even stronger winds. So the microburst phenomenon is a phenomenon that is part of a convectively generated storm. And that it happened in 1960, it happened mm-hmm. in 1940, you know, mm-hmm. it's, the question is there more moisture in the atmosphere, and is the atmospheric conditions more conducive for these microbursts and these downdrafts? And that's where I'm sort of like demurring a little bit with, because I haven't seen the ability to really interrogate that, that question. And my feeling is, statistically, it would be really hard to sort of figure that out.
As I recall, Jonathan Overpeck, who you know, mm-hmm. Professor Overpeck, and I think he wound up at Michigan.
University of Michigan, yeah.
But I remember him writing in the late 90s about that the storms, we would get more rain and could be more violent.
Okay,
so I don't think he even said would become more violent.
Okay, so this is going into, so let's.
Maybe we should take the break and then pick up on that.
Yeah.
And by the way, just had a listener say, what about all the tornadoes? We never used to have tornadoes. But anyway, we can pick up on all of this. Let's take a break right here, talking with UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido. It's Buckmaster on a Thursday.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Wow, the time flies when you're having fun, huh? We have Dr. Zach Guido. Are you a climate scientist? So much still to cover with Zach in about 10 minutes. So picking up on what Dr. Overpeck, when he was at the University of Arizona, he wrote in the late 90s that climate change would produce, in effect, more moisture. Not necessarily more lightning, but more moisture.
Yeah, Peck, as he went by. Yeah,
yeah. Peck,
he was right then, and that's still true. But I think we have to, like, let's separate for the moment the conversation about monsoon and monsoon trends and just that topic, which is global warming. A warming atmosphere leads to higher rainfall, and that there's both physical, you know, physics reasons for that, and where you actually can see that in some places in the data, you can actually see trends over time in that. The physical explanation is, you know, again, based on sort of thermodynamics, you know, physics, physical laws like the Clausian-Clapeyron relationship, you know, it basically states that the holding capacity of the air, the moisture holding capacity of the air, increases when the atmospheric temperature increases. And I think for every 1 degree Celsius, the moisture ability, the holding capacity in the atmosphere goes up by about 7%. Something like that. I'd have to look up the exact numbers, but it's on that order. And so that gives physical rationale to what you might expect to see in the data, which is that warmer atmospheres leads to higher rainfall totals when it rains. It doesn't mean that it would rain more frequently because you still have to have other atmospheric conditions. But when it does rain, it rains harder. And that leads to, you know, the theory that extreme events, rainfall events, will actually become more extreme.
Thus the term greenhouse. When you think of greenhouse, you think of higher humidity and more moisture.
Yeah, you think of higher temperature. Like, so the greenhouse is basically that the gases itself trap energy within the system. Mm-hmm. And that energy gets expressed in terms of heat in the atmosphere, mm-hmm. and, you know, warming of the ocean. And mm-hmm. and then the Earth system, our planet, our atmosphere, is basically set up to move energy around. I mean, that's why you get wind currents, right? And the wind currents, like, they do all these crazy kinds of things because our atmosphere doesn't have the same density. So, and it behaves like a fluid, but it's, you know, more dense lower and less dense higher. And it's not an exact sphere, it's an orb, and it's rotating. And so then you've got land. And so you get all of these eddies and the movements of the air and, you know, but fundamentally, the Earth system is set up to move that energy that comes in heavier at the poles, comes in more intensely at the equator,
yes,
and less intensely at the pole. So it's trying to redistribute that heat. From an Earth system perspective, if you didn't have the redistribution of heat, basically you would have, it would just increasingly get warmer and warmer and warmer at the poles.
Yes.
And it would increasingly get colder and colder and colder and colder. Sorry, I said that wrong again, didn't I?
Yeah.
At the equator. It would increasingly get warmer and warmer and warmer at the equator, and yes, get increasingly colder and colder and colder at the poles.
Yes.
I got it right there.
and the Earth system is set up to move air from the west to east generally, correct?
Well, that changes depending on where you are. So between the let's say between 30 degree north and 30 degree south, you're actually under easterly flow.
Oh.
And then okay. 30 to 60, you're under westerly flow.
Okay.
So it's a complicated Earth system where, yeah, the predominant winds, the trade winds, are actually in different directions. And bring this back to the monsoon, mm-hmm, right? What actually happens in the monsoon, and you talked about, you know, the monsoon being the Arabic word for wind, is basically the predominant direction of the winds shift for us. So in the winter, we're actually under westerly, right? But as that four corners high that we talk about so often in the monsoon shifts north, right? When we're on the southern side of that, mm-hmm, we're actually in the easterlies, okay?
So I get it. So the wind would be moving around the high, and when it gets to us, it would be coming from the east generally.
Okay, yeah. So in the northern hemisphere, a high pressure system, you have clockwise movement of air, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then to the south of that, you're like, some parts of that aren't going to be influenced by the rotation of the high, and you're going to be under easterly. And to the north of that high, you're going to be under westerly flow. So the position of the high for us is actually really important for the direction of the winds. So if the position of the high, so if you just sort of like draw this, if that is, let's say, in Arizona, Nevada border, right? So that center is right there. We're actually under northwesterly flow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the air is coming from the northwest. Mm-hmm. If you were to move that center of high, let's say over to New Mexico, mm-hmm, right? We're gonna be under southeasterly or southerly flow. So that position of the high is so fundamental to our monsoon season, because where it is determines if we're going to get moist air from the south or east, or dry air from the north and west.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Coriolis effect in the northern hemisphere?
Yeah, the Coriolis effect is a function of the rotating of the Earth, so that wind deflects to the, God, I'm going to get this wrong without drawing it. wind deflects to the west, okay, in the northern hemisphere.
Okay. Remainder of, we'll have you on again in early September, but what are we thinking? We're going to start to kind of at the midway point here, maybe have some drying out going on?
Well, okay, so I'm going to give a big shrug.
Okay.
But I did look at what the NOAA forecasts are calling for. There is a slight tilt in the odds for August being wetter than average.
Mm-hmm.
And then September drier than average.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say that the models have been wrong so far this year. Like before July, it was calling for a dry July. They didn't obviously foresee, and we didn't talk about it, but it was an interesting setup that ended up leading to a wet June that they really didn't see out. And you know, that's it's hard to pin them on that. But yeah, if we were to say that those are the best estimates, then you know, maybe September is sort of an early completion of the monsoon.
And quickly, and we can pick up on this in September, there's a transition going on from El Nino to La Nina. Bottom line, Zach, what should we know about the transition period?
Well, okay, so we're dominated. Our transition period, sort of October, late September, October, November, it's a period that we tend to look for tropical storms that are forming in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And that can really change the situation. La Nina tends to suppress those.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be one thing. And then La Nina has more of an expression in terms of proper wintertime rainfall, and it tends to tilt the odds toward drier in our area.
By the way, there were four hurricanes at one point off the coast of Baja. They weren't close enough to affect, you know, but they were kind of out in that mid-ocean area, but they were like four very close together at one point a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and Beryl in the Atlantic was the earliest Category 5.
What a rainmaker, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Zach, always a pleasure. We'll see you in early September. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
All right. From weather to travel, and well, when you travel, weather can certainly play a big factor. We've got our monthly program. We call it Travel Talk, presented by Bon Voyage Travel, right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, Tim Tomier will be with us the Tucson city manager. It's time for Insider Travel Talk on the Buckmaster Show with our travel contributor, Ryan Hansen. Ryan is president and chief operating officer of Bon Voyage Travel, Arizona's premier travel agency since 1976. The Bon Voyage travel experts are standing by. They are ready to create your trip of a lifetime. There are three Southern Arizona Bon Voyage offices, River and Campbell, Green Valley, and Oro Valley. BVTravel.com is their fine website, and it is your first stop in making those travel dreams come true. Let's welcome now Ryan Hansen back to the show. Hey, Rhino, how are you?
Good, Bill. Great to be back after a little bit of a break in July, and it's let's talk some travel.
Yeah, I want to talk travel, and I want to know about your trip. This was a family trip that you took to Iceland and Greenland. I've been to Iceland, enjoyed it very much, but Greenland is still on the old bucket list. So how did it go?
I went excellent. We flew into Reykjavik, and you and I have talked about the ease of access that Iceland actually is for us U.S. citizens and dwellers, that it really is not that far. We flew to New York City, spent the night in New York, which is always a fun destination, went out to dinner in Manhattan, and really split the trip almost in half. It was a 5.5-hour flight nonstop out of Phoenix, Phoenix to JFK, right into the city, and then JFK to Reykjavik nonstop on Delta Airlines, 5.5-hour flight. It was a very simple way to get to Reykjavik. That breaking it up helped us with kind of that time zone change, as it is a 7-hour difference right now from Tucson to Reykjavik. But what a beautiful, intrepid, unbelievable country that Iceland is. And we spent the day in Reykjavik and then boarded a cruise ship for a 10-night cruise that had multiple stops in Iceland and a couple of stops in Greenland. And it was everything you would imagine, Bill. I'll tell you, the Greenland experience was super interesting. 56,000 inhabitants on the entire island of Greenland. And so it was nary a person that we saw. We were out in the middle of nowhere, not a lot of trees. It was just really peaceful to be out in nature on our stop in Greenland.
You know, one thing that impressed me about Iceland, the people there in Reykjavik and even at the Icelandic airport, they are so attuned now to tourism, Ryan Hansen.
Very much so. The people there are welcoming. It's a very young generational situation. A lot of youth there, and they love serving people that come from all parts. And a lot of U.S. travelers, a lot of European travelers there as well. And they're set up beautifully, not only for the city goers that love Reykjavik, with from food to cultural outings. But it really is taking in nature, and it's a venture in the same day. You can see waterfalls, glaciers, black sandy beaches, and everything in between. And so they've got it for the very adventurous type that wants to scale the glacier with those ice pick boots on your feet, and you can climb up the glacier. Or if you just want the soft adventure that we did, which was more of some hiking and getting up close to those waterfalls. In fact, one of the very famous ones, Seljalandsfoss, and I am butchering the name. That's the one difficulty that I had with all the names in Iceland. That language is difficult for us English speakers, but it's one of the iconic waterfalls in all of Iceland, just a short 2-hour drive south of Reykjavik. I was able to, with our family, to get behind the waterfall.
Wow.
And really get into one of the most picturesque places in all of Iceland.
Yeah, it's one of the longest, or one of the biggest, the waterfall there is one of the biggest in Europe there in Iceland. You know, and if you want to go to Greenland, the way you did it is pretty much the way to do it, because trying to fly from North America to Greenland, it just doesn't work. You have to go, you can fly from Iceland over there or from Copenhagen, Denmark, because Greenland is a area still of interest to the Danish.
Yes, yeah, very much connected to the Danes. And you're right, it's small aircraft. So you're talking prop planes, most likely, if you're flying into Greenland. So cruising is a very efficient and easier way. There's two different types of cruising, though, that I do want to highlight if you want to get into ports of call that are smaller in the Arctic Circle or in Greenland in particular. We took a traditional ocean cruise vessel, and we actually had to miss two ports in Greenland because, if you can believe this, Bill, in July, there was still far too much ice for us to get close enough to dock near some of the ports of call and tender in. If we were on an expedition-style vessel that had icebreaker hulls built for this type of travel, we would have been able to easily traverse the ice that was thinner than the big icebergs. But our ocean vessel, not safe, so we did miss a couple of ports. And so if you really, truly want that experience, an expedition-style cruise ship would how you would want to do it versus the traditional ocean vessels. And we were not the only one. There was a number of ocean vessels that couldn't port in a couple of the stops. So just some tips and tricks of how to best traverse those more adventurous ports of call, either in Antarctica or in the Arctic Circle area.
Is it Disko Bay? Is that the very famous bay there in Greenland with all the icebergs?
Yes, which we were, of course, unable to traverse because of the icebreaker hull technology that we needed, so we missed that, but it's all right. There will be another opportunity for us to hit that hot spot.
Okay, do you want to mention the cruise ship you were on and your experience
there? Yeah, oh, absolutely. We sailed on the Regent Seven Seas Splendor, so it's about a 750-passenger ship.
Okay.
This particular cruise line, Regent Seven Seas, is an all-inclusive experience, so we didn't have to pay for our shore excursions. We didn't have to pay for our beverages. The specialty dining restaurants, all complimentary. You do not have to pay an upcharge that you would on some other cruise lines. So it was skewed more a little bit to the luxury side of a traveler, a lot more space-to-guest ratio is a phrase we would say in the industry. So large, expansive public spaces that made it feel like a very small ship, even though it was 750 passengers. We didn't see a lot of people, in and around the public spaces because they're so large. So this was a cruise line we loved. We love to sail it around the world. Again, if you want something a little bit more adventurous to hit all of the ports without the issue of the traditional ocean vessel and want that expedition experience, we would definitely recommend Silver Sea or Lindblad would probably be our top two recommendations. Those ships are going to be smaller and they're purpose built for that expedition style cruise.
Boy, that's why you need a talented and very knowledgeable travel advisor like your team at Bon Voyage, because there are really a lot of nuances when you get into Arctic travel.
Yeah, when you get into any travel,
any
right?
Travel.
So it's easy if you're just going to San Diego for the weekend, a travel advisor may not bring as much value or insight or expertise. But anytime now that you're going, beyond, Tucson's 300-mile radius, and you're especially international, the variances that we see from hotels, right? What looks like a nice hotel on a website or it's listed as a 4-star hotel in Europe, really, by U.S. standards, that's a 3-star hotel. Well, you typically would knock a star off of a hotel rating when you go to Europe in regards to amenities, accommodation level, size and square footage of the room. Does it have air conditioning or not? That is something that's not a guarantee, mm-hmm. and they're not going to highlight that on a website. So having an expert like you would find with all of our advisors, you get to the answers that you don't even know the questions to ask because you think, oh, 4-star, no problem. Oh, my goodness, you get there, and you're in Barcelona in the heat of the summer, and there's no air conditioning.
No air conditioning at a 4.
Don't require that. So good things to think about.
All right. Hey, Rhino, before we take the break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the 50, some of the highlights of very interesting travel and leisure, their 50 best places to travel in 2024. The industry, your industry is exploding right now with growth. Travel Age West, an industry newsletter, calling it robust, healthy, and growing.
Yeah, 8% higher in regards to the number of travelers that are hitting the road in 2024 than did in 2023. And over the next 3 years, Bill, it is going to boom into a $1 trillion industry. It's already a very significant part of the global GDP. It ranges in around 10% of the global GDP, the tourism industry. That's only going to grow as we're seeing people wanting to venture out. The market will hit some significant number of travelers. They're expecting 2.25 billion. Billion with the B, just like you, Bill, by the 2027 travel year of the number of travelers. It's an exciting industry. We love them now. When we come back, right, Bill, I'll tease it. We've got a couple of great destinations for you to think about that the travel and leisure folks have identified as the hot spots.
Yeah, one of them I'll be zeroing in on and traveling to in October, and we'll tell everybody about that when we continue with Travel Talk with Ryan Hansen right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We like to say it's about 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City. You know, we'll be, what, about upper 90s today? They're in the upper 80s over in Silver City, only about a three-hour drive, lots to do, hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, just hanging out in a really neat environment, a lot of Victorian architecture there in downtown Silver City. Only about a three-hour drive. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. We're talking travel with Ryan Hansen, our travel contributor. from Bon Voyage Travel, where he is the president and chief operating officer. There's so much going on with what you would consider Rhino hot destinations. One that I keep hearing a lot about, I know several people have taken the trip to Cartagena, Colombia, and it's on the list. Travel and Leisure magazine put out a 50 best places to travel this year, and Cartagena is right up there.
Yeah, 25 years ago, Bill, you probably wouldn't be thinking about traversing to Colombia, but now it's it's kind of transformed itself, right? It has been a popular destination, but I would say it's now a hot destination and really known as a luxury escape in South America. And every big-time heavy traveler is looking for something unique. And I would say Cartagena brings that from cuisine to culture, even tying into some Disney movie-themed trips. The movie Encanto has kind of opened up the eyes for many in the Latin circles of travel, and it's shining more light on Cartagena as one of the many stops that you can take. And it's really a special destination that kind of combines all of the rich history of South America, the Latin culture and food. It definitely should be on your list if you're looking for a new hot spot.
Yeah, they've restored a lot of the 17th century buildings there and made some of them into boutique hotels. So that sounds really intriguing.
Yeah, I love the opportunity that urban settings like this are creating unique accommodation experiences for hotels, and nothing more special than a 16-room boutique hotel that has been around in that building area since the 17th century, as you mentioned. And so for those travelers that love staying in something unique, right, you can stay at a Marriott or at a Hilton or at a Hyatt anywhere in the world, and it kind of feels like you're in the same hotel primarily because of all of the consistency of delivery of product. Venture out of your comfort zone a little bit and look for a place like Casa Pescuea. It is just a special place there, right in the heart of Cartagena.
All right, let's go through some of these others. When you think of the beach, a lot of people would think of the Caribbean or Hawaii. Costa Rica's got some wonderful Pacific side beaches.
Oh, and they are another hot spot for surfers, for just the sun and sand dwellers that want to get away. But what I love about the mantra of Costa Rica and their visitor tourism and visitors bureau is really pushing a phrase of how you want to live in Costa Rica like a local. And their phrase is the land of pura vida, right? That translates to pure life. And what do you think of when you think of pure life? This is how a Costa Rican would tell you, when you come and visit us, you need to focus on what's important: family, friends, gorgeous views, and tasty food, right? That's what they're all about.
Yep.
They don't
yep.
want you to sweat the small stuff and get hung up on everything that we do on your cell phone, your smartphone. They want you to stop and smell the volcanic soil. That is how they cultivate their coffee, right? It's just so rich and beautiful. They want you to take in the jungle sounds of Costa Rica. Take time to relax. That's the pura vida lifestyle. And just flat out slow down, right? Don't look at the clock. Don't let your to-do list guide your day. Let the wonderful views, the great smells, and the jungle lifestyle dictate what you want to do in the day. A great destination to visit, and not far for those of us here in Tucson. Not like you have to go across the globe to visit Costa Rica for those wonderful beach vibes.
And if somebody wants to do some trekking, Peru is right up there.
You know, and a lot of people think of, when you think of that part of the world, especially in Peru, it's much beyond just Machu Picchu, right? This is a place where all roads lead to something spectacular from a scenery standpoint, from a historic standpoint. We are partnered with an incredible, what we would call in the industry, tour operator called Alpaca Expeditions. And it's something super unique that I wanted to bring to the listeners' attention. It's an indigenous-owned outfitter, and they are leading some incredible trips. A trip that they're leading this year is it's their first ever all-women hiking trip. It's operated by women for women. So the guides, the porters, the drivers, the chefs, every staff member that's going to make your 7-day adventure special is a woman. And I just think that's something special and unique in this world that we live in now, that a solo traveler that's a woman, a couple of friends want to go on something unique and special. You're looking for that adventurous, intrepid style of travel that includes hiking and throws in some great regional nature and culture, great architectural sites. You should think about talking to us and booking a trip with Alpaca Expeditions and taking yourself to Peru.
I'd like a taste of France. So all goes well, I'll be up in Montreal for the autumn leaves in mid-October, Montreal, and then up to Quebec City. Should be fun.
Yeah, I'm going to be actually, Bill, in Montreal at the beginning of September for an industry function, and I'll get a chance to check out the Grand Quay, which is the city center pier. Lots of cruise ships are docking in the city center pier, and it's really building up the Port of Montreal, which is a super special place. It always has been, but they're investing a lot of money, the Montreal city, from a tourism standpoint, into that port of call, into their public transportation projects that are building, but more importantly for us, into their leisure travel accommodations. Four incredible new hotels on the luxury side of things are being built in the last couple of years, and Montreal now can boast over 24,000 hotel rooms to choose from deluxe accommodations, the budget traveler, all the way up to a brand new Four Seasons that brings that touch of luxury to the French city of Montreal.
Another one from the list. I love that drive up in Sonoma County along the coast.
Well, and you know this, Bill, lots of attention, as it should be, is headed to Napa. That's the place that many people feel is the wine country region. But more than double the size of Napa, Sonoma definitely offers a lot to do. And it's not just wineries, which you will have plenty to choose from, but they've got a new viticultural center that they've built that's expanding the thought process beyond wine. You're getting into the flora and fauna of the region, but there's some wonderful new hotels and properties in Bodega Bay. As you take the drive up to Sea Ranch, there's a cliff dwelling, a clifftop Sea Ranch Lodge that's brand new, newly renovated, that lots of people should consider. So don't just think Napa. Don't just think when you come or talk to Bon Voyage or think about your travels that, well, I have to go international to get something special. Sonoma and Napa are back on the food and beverage scene, as if Napa ever left, but definitely think of Sonoma as it's a rising popular destination.
How about those Portuguese wines?
Oh, you and I, first of all, we love talking about food and beverage. It drives a lot of people's conversations. When we talk to our travelers, Bill, and they come back and tell us about the best parts of their trips, I would say 70% of the time it starts with what did they eat and what did they drink, because people love that local cuisine and beverage. And when you start talking about wines, no better region in the world than the Porto region in Portugal, and we love traversing that area by river cruise. Cutting along the northern portion of Spain and Portugal is the Douro River, and you're going to be hitting wineries all along the sides of the ship that are easy to get to, and that's why we love the river cruise. You unpack once, and you just let the river ship be your mode of transportation from winery to winery, from Michelin star restaurant to Michelin star restaurant. This is a spectacular part of the world that is really taking off.
Oh, it's so fun to talk with Ryan Hansen about travel. We can pick up the conversation. We urge our listeners to do so. Visit bvtravel.com or just call one of the travel experts at one of the three locations in Southern Arizona for Bon Voyage Travel. Rhino, always a pleasure.
Great talking to you, Bill, and hope you have a great rest of your month.
Thank you very much. All right, that's going to do it. On behalf of Ryan Hansen and Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.